Hey, welcome everyone to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, the show for people who want positivity, hope, and examples of how to make the United States healthier, more productive, and hopeful. No extremism, no finger pointing. I'm DJ EJ, and I'm here with my co-host Habanero.
Good morning. And
our guest today is Whitley English. She's the founder of WNC GEMS, which stands for Girls and Guys Exercising Mindful Solutions. We're really excited about that. But first, of course, it's Scrabble Day. Get that triple word score and know all the words with Q's and Z's and see if you can fit that in, even though it's a nice day here in Asheville. So you might want to get outside too. Check out all of our podcasts at this show site on Asheville FM. Check out our blog and video insights at underaffiliated.com and stream Asheville FM live from the site or the app. Hey, Whitley.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How's it going?
I am amazing.
All right. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and WNC GEMS?
I am an Asheville native of Asheville, North Carolina. I'm a graduate of Asheville High School. And right now I'm creating a business.
Tell us about how it started.
Well, I'm a survivor of a domestic assault. Someone I dated 3 years ago. I had a situation where I dated someone for only 3 months. And the worst possible thing could happen. My life was almost taken. Right now, I'm a community health worker. I'm a peer support specialist, a recovery coach, and I'm a Reiki practitioner. I'm trained in trauma awareness and resiliency skills.
All right. Now, when we talked about the show before, you told us about your experience with the legal system as you sought protection from domestic abuse. Can you tell us a little bit about what you went through to give people a flavor? And as you do that, then maybe we can talk about how that led you to where you are now.
Okay, so like I said, I dated someone for 3 months. I didn't have any contact with them for a month. And then one night we casually got together and we went out to a club. And I didn't want to leave with them. And so that's when the incident occurred. So it's just a spur of the moment type thing. But it was very traumatic. When I went through the situation, he was released 48 hours later. So that is the main concern for what really happened to me. It was very traumatic and it was very extensive. And so it was considered a domestic violent situation. It was more serious than just an intimate partner relationship. The whole process, as far as the 48-hour hold, me being denied my ex parte, an ex parte is an immediate protective order. And it took me three weeks to go get one because I'm like traumatized in the situation, but I didn't know how to properly handle that type of situation. So when I went to go get one, I was denied my ex parte. And it just blew my mind. I was physically assaulted and I was denied a restraining order.
How did that land you into starting WNC GEMS, mindfulness, all of that?
Domestic violence is a very touchy situation where people aren't openly active about it. And there's really not too many resources. So I was given only limited resources at a agency here. We only have one shelter here. And I was given limited number of counseling sessions, which were very helpful for me. But other than that, I had to figure out how to heal myself. Like I didn't have support at all, really. I could ask people to help me. And it's just like, that's something you don't talk about. Or did you call a helpmate or whatnot? But I had to figure it out on my own.
Now, did you find that maybe people didn't appreciate the gravity of what had happened and they figured maybe it was not so bad or not so complicated? And, you know, did you have people that weren't really appreciating or were dismissive?
Yes, it was very dismissive. And it was just like such a thing that you're not supposed to be talking about. Like that's something personal.
Yeah, because that's at the very least you want someone who's going to be able to listen and understand and really hear you. Not just say, oh, you got into a little spat.
Or, well, you had a relationship with somebody and that's just basically what you get.
Did you feel that there was a lot of blame?
Yes. I was actually in IOP at a
IOP.
Intensive outpatient therapy. I was in a women's group and my counselor told me like my need to want to drink alcohol was why I got attacked.
That is such an old story. I'm just shocked to hear that that's still happening to anybody.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago. So,
but still, that's recent.
Very,
that's
very
recent,
much so.
And attitudes have changed in so many avenues since then.
So, what made you land on this idea of mindfulness?
Well, right now I'm working with victims and abusers. I mean, I haven't had men come forth yet, but I know I'm just going to be patient with that and just show like that I'm here to support that, because I understand men can be a victim as well. And there's also no resources for the perpetrators out here. So knowing that we all need to heal together, and it starts with yourself. And mindfulness is present moment awareness without any judgment, and just noticing how you feel in that moment. So people aren't really, as society, we're not really in tune with our emotions.
What are the steps that you took from this dismissive reaction that you received and all this trauma to actually being able to not only have that idea that what the first step needed to be was for self-healing, but to actually turn it into something where, you know, you got to see this really works, and then to put together something to offer to others? Because that's many, many steps.
Yes. Well, the first thing was tuning into my higher power, like my God. I believe in God, and I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in the books in the Bible, but I wouldn't consider myself Christian. I'm spiritual. So prayer and meditation for me was the start.
There was probably a lot of anger and frustration and hurt, and you landed on this spiritual approach. Do you think people who don't have the same beliefs of you can find the same thing? And if so, how?
If so, how? Believing that we all have life force energy within us. And that's, for me to speak right now, for you to speak to me, that's life force energy. So basically knowing that something higher than us created us to give us life, to wake up every morning, to me to speak to you right now. So believing in yourself or a higher being to get us through those hard times and hard situations.
I'm really struck by the courage it takes to turn off the anger, if you ever can, and the pain, and get to a place of service and other people. How would you describe that feeling in yourself that led you down that road?
Frightening, but also needed. Like, I'm a mother of a 13-year-old daughter. And so when I was attacked, she had to see me go to school her first day of fourth grade looking like that. It's just, I just knew I had to turn it around. I had to turn my pain into purpose and turn my purpose into my power. And it really just showed me like there was no resources out here that I felt like tailored to the needs that I needed for what happened to me.
And you also realized that how much of that probably had to start with you and be able to come from within you. So you're looking to help other people find that as a platform?
Yes, ma'am. So I wrote up what I consider what GEMS is. So GEMS stands for Girls and Guys Exercise and Mindful Solutions. GEMS is a minority mental health initiative connecting victims to resources for support and healing. We provide culturally sensitive care and services to meet individuals' unique needs. We hold sacred space for peer-to-peer healing circles that aim to increase awareness and understanding of mental health issues, related experiences, and faced by victims from underrepresented or marginalized communities or groups. As a community health worker, Reiki practitioner, trained in trauma awareness and resiliency skills, I work to connect individuals with counseling services, medical care, and other resources that can support their recovery. I also work with community members to identify and address systemic issues that contribute to violence such as poverty, access to services, and restrictive social norms.
How can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more or maybe participate in your programs?
I do hold a monthly session for an hour. It's free for the community at 216 Ashland Avenue in Asheville, North Carolina. My group this month will be April 27th at 6 p.m. for 1 hour, but I hold a group for an hour every month. So you can go to my website, wncgems.org.
GEMS?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. wncgems.org.
Yes, ma'am.
You're building a lot of different things. Did you train yourself? How did you get the training? You've got a place where people can go. How long has this been? 3 years that you've been doing this? 6 months? Tell us your story about how you built all this out and trained yourself.
So initially when the attack happened, like, I knew that it wasn't luck. For me, it's my spiritual like calling, letting me know like I survived this for a reason. And I've always been big into education. So when it happened, I was already a peer support specialist. And so I knew what that entailed. Peer support is for mental health and substance use. But as for me to go through my situation, it showed me that there's a needed lane for domestic violence. Like, I've created a niche. So I have so many certifications that I'm just honing in all my skills for gyms. So my life is gyms now.
It became a calling. It became, this is what I have to do. And so tell folks a little bit about what they might expect if they were to send you a note via your website or to go to one of your sessions.
Okay. Our goal is to empower individuals to take charge of their own health and well-being and work together to create healthier and more resilient communities that are supportive of all members. Advocacy and supporting victims of violence requires commitment to listening to their needs and concerns, as well as speaking up for their rights and dignity. I insist on working to break down cultural and social barriers that can make it difficult for individuals to come forward and seek help. My services will include peer-to-peer healing circles in a group, one-on-one sessions, and sound healing with crystal quartz sound bowls, one-on-one or group sessions, mindfulness practices, guided meditations, and Reiki energy healing sessions. I anticipate collaborating or partnering with other holistic teachers, healers, and leaders in the community. I want to be able to bridge the gap with assisting the community with access to free and affordable holistic healing practices like yoga, massage therapy, acupuncture, reflexology, aromatherapy, essential oil therapy, things of that type nature.
So many people have trouble accessing traditional health care and the barriers to what you're talking about, the holistic type care, is even higher because it's just completely out of reach for so many people. And it's not something that traditional health care recognizes or supports or reimburses for is really probably the bottom line on that.
So that's why I call this a minority mental health initiative. This is my campaign. Like, I'm bringing awareness to how much this type of work is needed, and it should be free and accessible and affordable.
So what would you say to someone who had in mind some of the things that Habanero was concerned about, like financially or other things that maybe you would have experienced? What would you tell someone to say, it's really a safe space and you can afford it, or how would you explain
that? Well, my services are free. My monthly sessions for an hour is free. And as a community health worker, my job is to help the community find the resources that's needed. So everybody's situation is different. Everybody will need different types of approaches to what they need. So it's just all situational for each individual.
And it's to your credit that you probably have a big Rolodex, as to use the old-fashioned term, of resources that are available. So you're able to listen to each person that comes to you and be able to say, oh, this program might be helpful to you. This book might be helpful to you. This class or this group might be able to take you to that next small step.
Definitely. It's not about giving advice. It's just about holding a safe space for people to just be heard. At the end of the day, somebody just wants to be heard and understood. And sometimes that's just enough, because I'm just trying to empower people to figure out the best choice to make for their situation.
And can anyone come? You did mention the term minority, and I want to make sure that's in the right context.
Yes, anyone. Okay. Like, for me, I'm a Black woman, and I've had people reach out to me who are white women who were treated just the same. So I am not discriminating against anyone, all genders, all races, whoever you are, you're welcome.
So it feels like anyone's welcome. And you can also connect them if they don't know what to do.
Yes.
Where do I go? How do I get help? A lot of what you're talking about is just support and encouragement and a way to navigate even the legal system. Is that right?
The legal system it's so hard. It's very, very hard. So thinking outside the box, that's what GEMS is. Thinking outside the box, and regardless of the problem, there's always a solution to something.
And so far, has it mostly, because I know the name's Girls and Guys, so far has it mostly been women?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just, like I said, I'm being patient. There's men out there who's needing the support as well. But I also want the men to know, like, you have a safe space within me.
At the same time, I know we talked about this before, preserving the safety that a lot of the women need as they're going through this process. So how many people typically ascend your monthly session?
So the first, like I just started January. So
oh, okay.
Every month I would say I've had over 10 people altogether.
Do you feel like this is more of a problem? This abuse problem is greater than people think it is?
Oh, it's a public health crisis. Society has made it to where it's not, it's normalized, and it's just what happens. It's just what it is. I'm kind of grateful and lucky that it was only a 3-month relationship. It's people that I know who are dealing with the things that I'm went through and don't have anywhere to go. They don't have a support system in place to leave the situation.
Can you tell us about the different points where you're just frustrated with the system that seem to be denying you just a right to safety?
The main thing is restraining orders. People don't know that you have to have a trial for a restraining order. So victims are being victimized and traumatized through the whole process. And then the offender doesn't have to be there for a restraining order. So every 12 months you have to reapply and you have to have a trial.
Feels a bit like blaming the victim.
That's what it felt like. Or the victim's having to prove the need for safety.
So the police reports, the hospitalization records, the pictures of the injuries,
the text messages.
All of that is not enough. It still requires the victim to almost have to be victimized again by having to relive.
Yes.
How often did you
publicly
have to
relive?
Yes.
So describe what that was like.
Many, many lonely days and hours in the court system by myself. And I didn't have anybody with person of color with lived experience to help support me through this.
So were there any professionals, lawyers?
I was appointed a lawyer from Pisgah Legal to get my initial restraining order, and I was denied my ex parte. I was told that it took me 3 weeks to come get it, so I didn't fear for my life, even though that the perpetrator got caught doing what he done to me.
So how long did this go on? Did you ever get the restraining order?
Yes, I finally got one, but I had to go to do trial to have it.
How many times?
Twice.
Two trials. Over how much time?
2 years. And because criminal court was taking so long, I went and got a civil lawsuit. And when I went to get my second restraining order, the judge laughed at me because I had got a lawsuit. Well, I told him, nothing was being done criminally fast enough. He said, that's between you and the DA's office. So what I have learned is the courthouse, the police department, the district attorney's office, they work together, but they're not working together.
So how did that process make you think about what's broken?
Everything. From day one, as far as the me going to get the restraining order, that paperwork, somebody who's been traumatized in an abusive situation like that, they can't comprehend those papers. Like, I'm a very educated person, and I didn't understand it. I didn't know what I was signing.
Right. It's not a simple form that says, here's the person's name, here's the date it happened, here's what happened, and attached is a copy of the police report and the healthcare records that are associated.
It made me feel like I was lying on him. Like,
what was so traumatic about going through this, even the forms?
Having to prove what happened to me. He got caught red-handed I didn't press charges. Thank God that it happened in the moment.
So they were witnesses?
Yes, but I didn't press the charges on my offender. He got caught, and I still had to prove what had happened to me. That it didn't make any sense. That was so scary.
So you had to fill out the forms, and who else needed convincing?
The system. It's about the procedures.
Okay.
It's about how the system is built and the procedures, the process.
And probably every step of the way, asking the same questions, repeat the whole thing, start from the beginning.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Could you describe a couple experiences with different departments? And again, I'm not pointing fingers at the departments. Mm-hmm. It would be wonderful if people could come forward and not be afraid. But it's also helpful to know where the sticking points can be. So we talked about forms, the DA's office, the police, different judges. How do they all work or not work together to create this systemic problem for you?
For me, they're still all separate. I mean, honestly, like, I'm just a file. I'm a number in a file. It wasn't nothing. It wasn't personal because they deal with so many other things in the courthouse. What happened to me was really not important to them. That's how I felt.
And there were no advocates there for you?
No. And that's where I figured out for myself that I had to heal myself. I couldn't look for other entities or therapists or resources. I had to tap into my own and figure it out for myself.
But now you're willing to help other people by being that witness and holding that space and being able to listen to other victims or people who are traumatized, step through that process and learn to tap into themselves.
Yes, definitely. My lived experience and my certifications as me in the things that I have, I'm very equipped that I can help with somebody. I have been told I've helped a lot of people so far. I want this to be bigger than just a support group.
Is some of what you do help people through the process? Because a lot of WNC Gems is on the other side of the trauma and you're through it. Do you help people as they're going through it?
Yes, I will.
And what are some of the things that you would offer to someone who is facing the same kind of situation? Just, I want a protective order.
If they want one, I would. If they need me to support them and I have the time and I'm available, I will walk them through it. I will be there with them side by side because I know how it felt to not have nobody there with me.
Do you feel like some people do have that support to go through it?
Yes and no. It's hard to say.
Because you not only need someone who's in your personal life who might be supportive of other things, but you need someone who's going to be supportive of that particular situation and not say things like it was what you were wearing or it was the time of day or
what did you do?
Yeah.
That was what I got. What did you do? What did you do?
Why do we continue to blame the victim in this kind of situation?
I think it's society has created that way of being or thinking. As I look at it, this is domestic violence is what just happens in the home between the male and the woman. But honestly, it happens with anybody. Like a woman can be a perpetrator as well. It's just so complex. It's deeply complex. I have friends who are in situations that they couldn't leave.
Do you feel like that this crisis affects I don't want to say race-based, but do you think there's a difference in domestic abuse among the different races?
Yes, I feel like if I was in a different class and I was a different race, like a prominent white woman, say, it would have been handled totally differently. My main thing is it's men and people who's being charged for drug situations who's getting way more time than what happened to my abuser. They're getting years for drug charges, but like the punishment that I feel like for what happened to me was not sustainable.
What was the punishment?
It took 2 years to get to trial, but we didn't do trial. I let them plead out because that was enough justice for me. But my attacker got 6 years, 10 months, and who's to say if he would do all of that? And I was told if we did do trial, he just would have got a year more, so which is 7 years. And it's men out here doing years for drugs.
Yeah.
So an actual physical assault gets less time than selling drugs, for example.
My attacker's charges was first degree kidnapping and felony assault. And he was pleaded out with 6 years.
Versus just possessing a certain amount of drugs.
Yep.
And getting 10 years.
Yep.
Wow.
Do you feel like your situation would have been different if either you'd had money, or explain how money works within the system?
I have information from the victim advocates of the courthouse. She told me that the system is not built to serve the victims. It's built to serve them, the people with the means, with the money to bond out. So my attacker got 2 charges, but he bonded out 3 or 4 times. One of my consultations that I got, my implant for my tooth was $9,000. And there was no resource agency out here for me to help me find that. I was denied resources. I was denied Give Back a Smile. I was denied NC Victims Compensation. And then I was able to reapply after so long. And they basically just sent me $800 and told me to leave them alone.
Why did that happen, do you think?
I don't know.
So tell me a little bit more about how the system is set up to not help the victim. And I don't want to say help, but
assist.
Yeah.
So those 2 years that I was trying to go through the proceedings through court, he was out free. And I'm out here trying to get him held accountable for the things that he got caught in the act of doing.
And also getting your own health care.
Yep. Thank God I had Medicaid, so I was able to go to Affordable Dentures and get my partial for my front tooth, but my front tooth is a partial, and I still need it replaced. It's just about people caring and having those right people in power and position to be able to make sure that money goes to such and such.
Why do you think the system treats victims the way that you were treated and then doesn't look out and say, this person's free. Should we be watching them? Should we be looking? Should they have to check in or something that says they should be held accountable? Why do you think the system works that way?
It's just how the system was built. I can't say that we can change the system, but we can create innovative ways like WNC Gyms to work around those things.
So that puts a lot of the burden on people to help themselves.
And in this day and age, you have to be able and be equipped to do that.
So the system can't be changed.
I don't feel like it can. I think the system is deeply rooted, especially here.
And so when you say deeply rooted in?
For me, it's racial and classism.
Do you feel like if you had more money, things would have been different?
Definitely. My civil suit, we asked for $300,000. I got $30,000, and I owe my lawyer $10,000. And it goes to $20,000, which that was the same amount of money that I was bribed.
If you'd had the means, what would you have paid for that would have been different?
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe for one, my tooth for sure. I wouldn't have to be worried about that. But I think everything happened for a reason. I really do. Like, honestly.
A lot of people might turn to, I'm going to advocate to fix the system. And you said, I'm going to advocate for me, and I'm going to look inward and become, you know, at peace with myself and help others. How did you land there?
It's a greater knowing, my higher conscience, my higher self, knowing that I couldn't turn to anybody else but God and myself, and to know that, to show others, to be an example that you can find that strength within yourself as well. Like, don't let anything defeat you. Help yourself. Because you can. You have the power and the means to be able to help yourself.
How do you set the platform for people who are maybe where you felt initially in your journey? They've been traumatized. They've been hurt. They've been dismissed. They've probably still healing physically and definitely emotionally. How do you help them see those steps to be able to take to start looking inward, where you can say, okay, I'm done expecting or waiting or being disappointed, and I'm going to figure out.
It's just a choice. Either you stay where you're at, or you can be courageous and try something else and see where that takes you. First and foremost, I have some things that I would like to say for the victims. You are not alone. It's not your fault. It's okay to feel scared or unsure. You have the right to seek help. And healing is possible. Healing is not a destination. It's a journey. It's going to be continual. I will forever continue to heal. I am not completely healed. Who is? But I will continue to heal daily for the rest of my life.
How do you tell people who are angry? Angry at the whole, that probably, I would imagine that they blame the perpetrator, they blame themselves, they blame the system. How do you convince people that there's power in going down the road of self-healing, self-recovery, and self-enlightenment?
Their anger is valid. And for them to feel that, it's valid. They can sit with that. But don't stay with it. Forgiveness is the key.
Who did you forgive and how did you forgive?
I'm not going to lie. I'm still working on it. But I know that I have to, and it's not for them. It's for me. You can't preach to the choir without doing the things that you need to do for yourself.
Did you ever blame yourself?
Of course. I felt like, honestly, it's a lot of perpetrators are predators, and they prey on weak women who lack boundaries. So like I said, I was in IOP when that happened to me. So I was mentally messed up, and I lacked boundaries. So I was a weak victim for them.
It's just hard to fathom or process.
tell me about it.
There are people who may be listening mm-hmm. who are angry mm-hmm. and are like, Whitley, there's more than just self-healing, and I respect you for what you're doing, but they want to fight back. And that's a different... What would you tell people, regular people who are listening, who are at one moment, what a remarkable woman Whitley is, at the same time, want to fight back?
Look at their situation at hand and what is the best next possible step for them to move forward. And honestly, reach out to me. That's what I'm here for. I am here for people who feel like that.
And people can connect with you at your website, wncgems.org.
So describe what it would be like if someone showed up.
Okay. Well, you show up, you come in, and there is security there, so you have to check in. So it is a safe place. And I'm just trying to make the area comfortable for everyone. So I lay my altar out, and I put all types of my books and things out, and I have my sound bowls out. So basically, I want the group to choose what we're going to do. So the main thing is mindfulness. So mindfulness practices is a powerful tool in trauma recovery. Trauma survivors often experience a range of physical, emotional, and mental symptoms that can be difficult to manage. These symptoms may include anxiety, depression, panic attacks, flashbacks, and intrusive thoughts. Mindfulness practices can help trauma survivors learn to manage these systems by increasing awareness and acceptance of their thoughts, emotions, and physical sensations. So teaching mindfulness techniques can be the start.
How is there are there a number of visits that you recommend people come to see you, or is it just a one time?
Well, like I said, the space that I hold the meetings is once a month, but I'm open for people to start making appointments if they would like.
On your road to more comfort, or wherever your journey lands, more security, feeling safety, what were some of the moments where you maybe said, okay, I need to focus on this, meaning my own well-being, instead of being angry? And then once you focus on that, you say, well, gee, I can focus on helping others. What were there any triggers that led you to keep going to the next step or uncover what the next step was?
Honestly, initially when it happened to me, like my whole goal was to help others, like just showing others you can stand up for yourself and you can be your own hero. It's been throughout the whole process. Like today, like this interview is like a milestone for me. Like I'm very grateful and appreciative of being here today.
If someone listening comes across somebody in their life who has experienced something like this or a trauma, what can they do to be supportive or to maybe help that person?
To really just understand where I was coming from. Not blame. Be not quick to blame at all. So just not to blame, and just to understand, and to hold space for people to share. It's a lot. I'm not gonna lie. It takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of time and patience. But it's definitely worth your self worth. Uh-huh. And to speak up if you see something that is not right. Wrong is wrong. Right is right. Perpetrators sometimes, they are charming and manipulative. They wear this mask, and it's really scary because I didn't see it coming. I had never been a victim of physical abuse. So it wasn't just a domestic assault. To me, it was attempted murder.
How would you ask people to reframe blame? Because at the bottom of this seems to be this issue we have with the assumption that people are innocent until proven guilty. And that's philosophically, I think people get it. However, if we do too much of that, we end up blaming the victim. How would you ask people to reframe that?
Reframe. Just don't speak without knowing all the facts. And even people who think they know all the facts, don't nobody know what happened but me and him.
Should we put more of the burden on the
system?
What about the suspect? Should he have had to do more to say, I'm innocent?
Yeah. Honestly, it's people who get drug charges and be held in the county jail. He was able to bond out because he had the means. So I guess people who have money, just because they have money, they can do whatever they want.
You get as much justice as you can afford. I actually learned that very early on in my young woman, vulnerable personal journey.
And we've been talking about this for decades. We've been talking about this issue of domestic violence and the abuse of women at the hands of men for a long, long time. And it's the same story. What were you wearing? What were you drinking? What were you doing? And the perpetrator...
The perpetrator told the police that I had fail.
That you had what?
Fail. I had multiple facial fractures. I had a broken nose and a missing... My front tooth was it was knocked out of my mouth from the root. But he told them that I fail.
This has been one of the hardest conversations that we've had, EJ.
Yeah, and I just appreciate your courage for being willing to talk about it.
It needs to be talked about.
It needs to be talked about, and I try to be very specific about what we need to be talking about. And this idea of blame needs to really go away. And it's probably the most frustrating thing about it from my perspective is to hear that it's over and over, and we know that that's the problem, and the burden of proof is always on the victim. It's just a tragedy that we're left with the system being what the system is, and the only recourse for victims is to do something courageous, which is go, I'm going to help other people deal with it. And just from my perspective, I think that's a great individual solution. And what you're doing is absolutely courageous for other victims. I think the system ought to change.
Yes, it should.
I think it's an outrage that this goes on. And like I said before, we've got roughly three generations here in this room, and we're talking about the same thing.
It's scary.
I'm tired of the term, we can do better. We should be doing better. We know what the solution is. And I just appreciate you being here and having the courage to talk about it. And I think the people you work with are probably getting a tremendous benefit. And I hope listeners out there are reminded of how frustrating the situation is. And that's why I kept asking for what's the little things that folks can do. Talk about fixing the system. Talk about taking blame out of the system and making everybody work to prove their role in these kinds of crimes.
I hope to get laws changed one day, get into the legislature.
What would be one law that you would want changed?
That 48-hour hold.
Okay.
Whatever that looks like, that needs to be readdressed.
Well, you know what? One step at a time, but you can never take too many steps fast. Thanks a lot, Whitley. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.